This week on Africa Update, Sudan and Chad sign a peace deal, and a U.S. military study finds that many suicide bombers in Iraq come from North Africa. For more, we've got Bill Fletcher. He's a senior scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies and former president of Trans-Africa Forum. Hi, Bill.
Hey, I'm glad to be back.
So last week, the presidents of Sudan and Chad signed a peace deal in Senegal, the Dakar Agreement. They promised to stop armed groups in the Darfur region from staging attacks along their shared border. So if they're successful, the pact would represent a step towards ending the violence in Darfur. What's the significance of this deal?
I think we should talk about the potential significance of the deal, and that is that there have been these cross-border raids. There have been Chad rebel groups based in the Sudan that have been attempting to overthrow President Deby of Chad. And there have been Sudanese rebel groups based in Chad that have been active in the Darfur region, at least. And so what this may do, if it works, is help to, if not demilitarize the situation, reduce the tension and conflict along the border, and may make it easier to start dealing with the humanitarian crisis that exists among the refugees and displaced people.
Hundreds of thousands of people have been killed and 2.5 million people displaced. What stake, Darfur has come up in the context of the U.S. relationship to China, China's relationship to Sudan. There's a whole cascade of international relations that are being called up as this issue is being debated. But what's the significance for the U.S. from the U.S. perspective of dealing with this region?
This is a highly unstable region. Chad is a de facto neo-colony of France, to be blunt. President Deby was saved essentially by French troops, and so he runs a very unpopular government in Chad, and even though these rebels that attacked are being prompted by the government of General al-Bashir of the Sudan, there are domestic reasons within Chad that the situation would be unstable. Obviously, the Sudan is unstable. And what the United States worries about, and I think exaggerates it, is that they worry about the potential impact of terrorist groups in that region further destabilizing the situation. I would argue you don't need terrorist groups to destabilize the situation because the nature of most of the governments there, the police state character of a number of them, despotisms, mean that the situation will remain unstable until we deal with real democracy and economic development.
How much latitude do international peacekeepers have in enforcing this kind of an agreement?
Well, they will have a certain strategic ability because of where they will be placed along the main road into the capital of Chad. So it is it's less a matter of latitude and more the fact that they're going to be standing in the way of rebels that would be coming out of the Sudan. Again, as we've discussed in other programs, one of the problems that we in the United States have is that when we look at these conflicts, we look primarily at how to stop the fighting, how to get the various sides to put down their guns, as opposed to understanding what are the political dynamics in these countries that have led to the situation in the first place, and the economic dynamics, and what must be done. And that's where the U.S. comes up short almost all the time in really playing a constructive role.
Now, let's move on to another huge topic. A new U.S. military study found that most suicide bombers in Iraq are foreigners. Many of them have come from North African nations like Libya, Sudan, Algeria. Saudi Arabia is still the largest single source, and the report described who the typical suicide bomber was based on interrogations of fighters. It found that a lot of the bombers are alienated young men, students, workers with blue-collar jobs. Now, Bill, back in December, after two car bombs exploded in Algeria, we talked about the rise of militant attacks in North Africa. Is North Africa a hotbed of terrorism, either internally or in terms of exporting fighters?
I wouldn't describe it as a hotbed of terrorism. I'd describe it as a hotbed of discontent, of frustration, And one of the roots of dealing with that frustration happens to be for people to join terrorist groups. But terrorist groups, by and large, and this may sound contrary to the popular wisdom, Farai, terrorist groups, by and large, really are emblematic of weak social movements. And so the question is, why are there weak social movements when there is despair and economic distress in many of these countries? And part of the reason is that many of the governments that are in power, for example, in Egypt, Morocco, or Saudi Arabia for that matter, were put in power either with the direct involvement of the United States or the complicity of the United States, and there were active efforts to suppress indigenous, secular, left and nationalist movements that did not rely on terrorism. So with the elimination of many of these groups, many of the younger, particularly men, but increasingly women, have found terrorism as the route to express their despair, their utter contempt for these police states.
That's a situation or an argument that does not erase the terror of terrorism, the idea that these attacks are hurting not only the communities where these people come from, but the communities that they go to commit their crimes. So what's the solution? What are some of the solutions, either from U.S. policy perspective, a national perspective within these countries? Where do you see the hope coming from?
Well, one of the things which is not something that we do in this country very well is recognize that we have a nickel in this dime. And that there is complicity in creating the situation. So we have to recognize that. The second is that if youth are going to be turned away from terrorism, which they must, then there must be economic development and political development in these countries, which means, for example, that instead of the United States giving unqualified support to President Mubarak in Egypt, Egypt must be encouraged to make a democratic transition, not simply multi-party elections, but where there's a flowering of social movements accompanied by real economic development that's designed by the people of Egypt. The same in Algeria, which went through an extremely bloody civil war. So in no way am I apologizing for the terrorism. I'm saying that the terrorism is an example or an illustration of the deep frustration that exists in many of these countries that does not get channeled in productive directions.
Well, before we let you go, just tell us very briefly about an Afro-Arab youth festival that was held in Uganda. Do you see that as an example of one of these efforts to try to knit people together as opposed to letting them fall into despair?
Oh, absolutely. This is fascinating. And it's fascinating in part because there's almost no coverage in the U.S. media. It's interesting that President Gaddafi of Libya gave the closing address. And one of the things that he pointed out, which we've talked about before, is that this distinction between Arabs and Africans is actually a false distinction. Two-thirds of those people identify as Arab, as President Gaddafi pointed out, are in Africa. And so there is a question of breaking down the barriers that exist between the self-identified Arab and those that are not. And what President Gaddafi was emphasizing was continental unity. I think that that theme needs to continue to be hammered away. And this conference is hopefully a step in addressing that, as well as addressing real divisions that exist in the continent that are ethnically based or ethnically focused, at least.
Very briefly, do you think that some of the wounds cannot be healed? Ongoing issues of slavery and trafficking. Bringing kids together is great, but it's not enough always, is it?
It's not enough. I'm an optimist. I believe that things can be healed, but what it necessitates is recognition of history as opposed to trying to get beyond it. And the second is actually taking steps to encourage nonviolent debate and exchanges where different sides are getting to know one another and understand that one, in fact, can disagree without being disagreeable or without picking up an AK-47.
Well, Bill, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Bill Fletcher is a senior scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies and the former president of Trans-Africa Forum, and he spoke with us from NPR's Washington, D.C. headquarters.